Now we're holding on Tesvov Amud Beis by the last two dots, 11 lines from the bottom. We went through in the Mishnah so far all of the cases where you need a Beis Din of three, or in some cases we said there's a machlokas that you need five or seven. Then we had the cases where you need a Beis Din of 23, dinin nefashos, and now we start getting into the things that the Mishnah says require the full Beis Din of 71, the Sanhedrin Gedolah. So one of them is ein donin chula. The Mishnah had said that you can't judge a the Mishnah had said you can't judge a shevet or an irani dachas only by the Beis Din of 71. So the Gemara says, "Hai shevet dechota b'mai." What are we talking about? What aveda did this shevet do that was saying that the Sanhedrin Gedolah has to deal with the matter? Ilema shevet shechilos Shabbos. So you're going to say that an entire shevet broke Shabbos, for example. Why would we say that the Sanhedrin Gedolah needs to deal with that case? We're not obviously Chilul Shabbos is just an example of one of the many Yaveiros that they could be over. The Gemara is assuming, even to start with, that we're not going to get the Sanhedrin Gedolah involved just if they did a lav or something, if they did a plain old lav that would get the Malkus or something. We're talking about something that would involve Chiyuv Misa. Are we talking about that? But why should it be? When we can say the Torah draws a distinction between individuals who did an Aveda versus the majority, bemezid, that is, le'inin is as far as Avodah Zarah. Whereas we're going to learn further on, when it comes to Avodah Zarah, there's a difference as far as an Irani Dachas. We're going to talk now, there is an Irani Dachas, which is a special case, but we're also going to talk about as far as a whole Shevet. So there we can talk about there's a distinction the Torah draws between who should be judging such a case, whether the Sanhedrin Gedolah or whether a local Sanhedrin or the Sanhedrin of the Shevet, as we're going to talk about soon. B'sham mitzvahs be polig, but when does Hashem ever draw such a distinction as far as other mitzvahs? So why should the Sanhedrin Gedolah have to get involved in a case like that? Ela b'shevet shehudach. So no, we have to be talking about that an entire shevet has been led astray to worship Avodah Zarah. Hudach, like you have an iran, same shem shoresh as the word irani dachas. So it means, in other words, we are in fact dealing with Avodah Zarah. The question is, does that mean then exactly that if all or most of a shevet goes and worships Avodah Zarah, then we're going to treat them like the rabbim? Now we know the Torah tells us in the case of an irani dachas, we have special dinim that apply that don't apply when an individual worships Avodah Zarah. We're going to have all the details about irani dachas at the end of our Masechta. Most of them, we're going to have a little bit on R, we're going to have a little bit here on Daf Tesvav Tes Zayin. One of the differences is that one of the differences is what kind of penalty do they get? Individuals who worship Avodah Zarah, Bemezid, with Edim Vahasra, are getting Skila. When it's Rabbim, when it's an entire city, then the people of that city who worship at Avodah Zarah, the people of the Irani Dachas, are getting Hereg. They're getting their heads chopped off. That's an interesting point we talked about yesterday, and we're going to learn further on in the Masechta that Hereg is less serious, is less severe than Skila. Why is it that they're downgraded to Hereg if they were a Rabbim? There's an interesting sicha about that that Rebbe discusses, an opinion, I think, of the Rogatchover that wants to say that in that case, when it's Rabbim, then basically they lose the status of Jews entirely, and they become like Bnei Noach. And Bnei Noach, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta, we're going to have a whole sugya on the details of the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach. Bnei Noach, when they're over on their mitzvahs, they always get saif, they always get hereg. So the Rebbe discusses that point, and the Sicha doesn't really like it, and he goes and discusses the matter in some detail. Anyways, the point is, so you're going to say that that's what it means. In other words, that when a shevet worships of a desert, we treat them like rabbi, we treat them like the members of an irani dachas, and as we're going to say further on, an irani dachas has to be judged by the Beis Din of 71. The question is, Kiman, well, who would that be like? Like Rabbi Yoshia, like Rabbi Yonason. Then it would come out not like Rabbi Yoshia and not like Rabbi Yonason, because they have different opinions, as we're going to see now, and neither one says that an entire shevet is treated that way. D'tanya, ad kama usin irani dachas, how many people do there have to be in a city in order for us to declare it an Eir Nidachas, Yud Vad Kuf. If there's anywhere between 10 and 100, 10, that less than 10 is not considered a city, as we find in Masechta Megillah, we find, for example, where a city doesn't have a Sod HaBatlonim, where it doesn't have 10 people who are constantly available to help make a minyan and are sitting there and learning in the shul, then it's not considered a city. Here we're not dealing at that level. Here we're not dealing with Talmud Chachamim specifically, but nevertheless, the city does have to have 10 people in order for us to even be able to consider it a in order for us to be able to consider it a city. More than 100, more than 100, then Rashi says it wouldn't be considered a city anymore. It wouldn't be considered a regular city. It would be considered like a large city. It would be considered, Rashi says, actually, it would be almost more like, it would be more like a kohol. And a kohol, a tzibur, Rashi says, it would be like a tzibur. And by a tzibur, you don't have this concept of giving them saif. Tosfos actually points out there's a pasuk in the Navi Amos that mentions a city that they're talking about how the Jewish people are currently in this time of the first Beis Mikdash so powerful and mighty, but Hashem is going to show them who's boss. And the expression is in the pasuk that a city that produced 100 people, a city that was able to produce 1,000 people, meaning 1,000 people would go out of the city every day to work or to join the army when there was a war, it would must to 1,000 people for the army or whatever, you're only going to have 100 left. And a city that would have had 100 is going to have only 10. So basically, the Tanoim are arguing over here. So basically, Rabbi Yoshia is saying then that you have that that anywhere from 10 to 100 can be considered a city based on that pasuk. Anyway, so that's Rabbi Yonasan. That's Rabbi Yoshia. Rabbi Yonasan Amar Mikufvad Rubi Shal Shevet. Rabbi Yonasan says no. Only if it's 100. Only if it's anywhere from 100 and up, all the way to the majority of the Shevet. So again, Rabbi Yoshia is figuring since the pasuk in Amos mentions a city that's going to have only 10 men in it. So we see that a city can have 10. Whereas Rabbi Yonasan is taking the view that since earlier in the pasuk it mentions that the city used to have 100 in it, then therefore that's the definition of a city is it has 100. Anyway, he says Vad Rube shall shave it only until the majority of the shave it, but not more than that. So nobody holds that the entire shevet would be judged in that way, but as an Eir Nidachas, that's what Gemara says. Even Rabbi Yonasan is only saying when it comes to the majority of the shevet. Even he is not saying that when you have an entire shevet worshipped of a zara, that they should be treated like an Eir Nidachas and be judged with saif and be judged by a Beis Din of 71, etc. So where are we getting that if an entire shevet worshipped of a zara, then the Beis Din of 71 judges them? So the Gemara says Omer of Masna. So Rav Masna says, you know what? We're not talking about the entire shevet. What we're talking about, Hocha benosi shevet trachota askinan. What we're talking about when we're saying the Sanhedrin of 71 has to get involved, we're talking about when the nosi of a shevet worshipped Avodah Zarah or did or done not just worshipped Avodah Zarah, but did anything that would make him chayev misas based in if convicted. So then the Mishnah is saying that you need then the Mishnah is saying that you need the Sanhedrin Gdola to deal with the matter. And why is that? Milo Omer Rav Ada Bar Ava. After all, didn't Rav Ada Bar Ava say Kol Adavar Agodo Yaviu Elecha? When the Pasuk says, now we have when Yeshua, not Yeshua, when Yisrael advises Moshe to set up Shoftim. So when Yisro advises Moshe to set up Shoftim, so he tells him here's how it's going to work. You're going to have a hierarchy of judges. You're going to have one level above the other, and then eventually you're going to have Kol HaDavar HaGadol Yaviu Elecha. Any great matter is going to be brought to you. So what do we mean? Any great matter? So the Gemara explains. It means dvarav shel gadol. It means anything involving the gadol, anything involving the great person of the Jewish people. We're going to learn that in the next parak again. When we're dealing with the kohen gadol and the king, the kohen gadol particularly being judged by the Beis Din of 71. So therefore, Hainami Godel, who so we can argue then the Nossi of a Shevet, after all, is also a Godel. He's a great person, higher than most people. So therefore, we should say that he also needs to be judged by the Beis Din of 71. Okay, so that's one explanation of what it means. Of what it means in done as a shave it doesn't mean the shave it as a whole. It means the nasi of the shave it. All right, the Gemara says Ula Amar Rabbi Elazar. Ula says in the name of Rabbi Elazar. Another explanation. Beboyin al iske nachlis. You are talking about an argument of shvatim, but you're talking about where they're arguing. They're arguing about the land that they were portioned in Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, you have Pashat that two Shvatim are arguing a certain territory. Was it assigned to us or was it assigned to you? And therefore, why would we need the Beis Din of 71 to get involved? Is because just like when they originally divided up Eretz Yisrael, just like when they first divided up Eretz Yisrael, they needed the Beis Din of 71 to be involved. There's a the same and the point of that was that the point of having the Beis Din of 71 involved was very important. Actually, it meant the Rambam puts it at the Rambam puts it in at the beginning of Hilchos Trumas. It makes it that all of Eretz Yisrael, even the areas that hadn't been conquered yet, are considered kibush rabim. They're considered areas that were conquered by the entire Jewish people collectively, and therefore they're going to be able to have the full dinim of Eretz Yisrael. Whereas if there was an area where if there's an area which was conquered by a yochid, by individuals before the entire rest of Eretz Yisrael was of Eretz Yisrael was conquered, then it would be considered only kibush yochid, and it would have other dinim as we have with Syria. That was Syria is exactly that situation where David conquered it before he had fully conquered Eretz Yisrael, and he didn't have the permission of the Sanhedrin for that. So therefore, so here you have to have the Sanhedrin involved. So therefore, Ula is saying the same thing. Now, if you have later on an argument between Shvatim, who got what piece of territory, then you also have to go to the Sanhedrin Gedolah. The Gemara says, "E matchilasa kalpi onu v'tumim v'chol Yisrael." Well, by the beginning, when Eretz Yisrael was first divided up among the Shvatim, you needed not just the Sanhedrin of 71. There also needed to be a box for the lottery, as we learned in Bava Basra about the whole system they used for the lottery to divide out Israel. Or they needed the Urim V'Tumim to confirm it. The Chol Yisrael and all the Jewish people have to be present. Afka, I know you're going to say the same thing over here. If two Shvatim are arguing over their borders in Eretz Yisrael, are you also going to say that they need the box, the box for Gerolos and the Urim V'Tumim and the whole Jewish people? And we don't have any reason to say like that. Tosfos points out there is a different Gemara in Eruvin that implies that that says that Yeshua never actually needed to consult the Urim V'Tumim. So Tosfos points out when it comes to dividing Eretz Yisrael, of course he did. What we mean is he didn't need to for other purposes because he had Nevuah. So, but in any case, the point is that you needed all of those factors when it comes to dividing up Eretz Yisrael. So, if you're going to compare this new division of Eretz Yisrael to that, then you should say the same kind of thing that you're going to need that you're going to need all of those things present in order to judge the case. And obviously it's not. So therefore it's clear we have to use Rav Masna's answer, which is when we're talking about judging the shevet, what we really mean is judging the nasi of the shevet. So if there's a nasi again who did anything that would make him chayiv misa, then Rav Masna is saying he has to be brought to the Beis Din of 71. Okay. Ravina Omar, Ravina says another answer. You know what? Let's go back to we are talking about an entire Shevet was convinced to worship Avodah Zarah. So therefore that would also mean then that we do have to take them to the Beis Din of 71. Now the question is that really so? Do we really judge them like the Rabbim? Do we really judge them like an Irani Dachas? Didn't we say before that Rabbi Yonason and that didn't we say before Rabbi Yoshi and Rabbi Yonason argue how many people need to have been convinced to worship Avodah Zarah for us to judge like the rules of an Irani Dachas? And we said even Rabbi Yonason had only gone so far as to say Rubei Shel Shevet, most of the Shevet, but if it's a minority of the Shevet, then even he agrees apparently that you judge them like Yechidim. So therefore that was your question then in that case. So why would the Beis Din of 71 need to be involved? The answer is Ain. The answer is, as a matter of fact, yes. Even though we may say in such a case, we're going to execute like Yechidim, we're not going to give them the special Misas Beis Din that we're not going to give them the special kind of Misas Beis Din that a that the Irani Dachas would get, that they're going to get, that they're going to get Sayif and the city is going to be burnt down, et cetera, as we're going to learn all the details later in the Masechta. Nevertheless, though, we can say Beinah Dinah Derabim Dainin Leih. Nevertheless, we do have to judge them in a Beis Din of the majority, in a Beis Din of the Rabbim, namely the Sanhedrin of the namely the Sanhedrin of 71. After all, Mila Omar Rab Chama Rab Yosi Omar Rab Oshia, don't we have that Rab Chama Rab Yosi said in the name of Rab Oshia that when the Pasuk says regarding Avodah Zarah, the Pasuk says you should take out that man, or that woman who worshipped Avodah Zarah, and you take him out to the local Beis Din and you try them and convict them and have them executed. And why does it have to mention that man or that woman, when previously the Pasuk has described that we're talking about that a man or woman has worshipped? It means ish isha to motzi l'sharecha, means when it comes to that a person has to that people have to be tried for an avera and convicted by Beis Din. If it's an ish v'isha, if it's individuals at motzi l'sharecha, then you bring them out to your gates, namely to the number of people, then namely to the local Sanhedrin. The iat motzi kol hashevet kulo l'sharecha. But you don't bring out the entire shevet to your gates. Rather, in other words, they have to be brought to the national Sanhedrin. So therefore, here we thought before that no, only up to the majority of the shevet would it be like that. Now we're saying that no, if it was the entire shevet, then and the pashtus, maybe even if it was the majority of the shevet, whatever. The point is that we would say they're not judged like an Irani Dachas, but they do need to be judged by the Sanhedrin of 71 rather than by local Bata Dinim. Okay. Therefore, we have two answers of what the Mishnah means when it says "ein donan as a shevet," that a shevet can be judged only by the Beis Din of 71. Either it means where the nasi of the shevet is being judged, or it means where the entire shevet is being judged for avodah zarah. So nevertheless, though, we treat them like yechidim insofar as the actual method of misa, and we give them skila like a regular person would who worshipped avodah zarah, rather than hereg as they would if they were an irin idachas. Next, the Mishnah had said loyas navi sheker. Another one that has to be judged in the Beis Din of 71 is a navi sheker, a person who comes and says a nevuah that turns out to be false. Now we're going to learn a lot of these things that we're learning in the Mishnah. We're going to expand on throughout the Masechta. So the same way as the Irani Dachas, now we're going to expand on at the end of the Masechta. The navi sheker, we're going to have a lot of discussion about it at the end of the 10th perek of our Masechta on Daf Pei Tes and Tzadik. There we're going to define how exactly we determine a person as a Navi Sheker, etc. But here we're saying that he has to be judged by a Beis Din of 71. So it must is Manani Mili. Where do we know that from? We make a gzeirah. We have a gzeirah shava on the word hazoda, which is the shodosh of the word zodain or mezid from the zokin mamre. Where by the zokin mamre the pasuk says va'ishashayasa bezodain, and by the navi the pasuk says hashiyozid ladabadover. So in both cases the pasuk mentions that he does it bemezid. So malahalan b'shivim echad afkan b'shivim echad. Now with the zokin mamre, as we talked about the other day, when does he get executed as a zokin mamre? Only if he defied the Beis Din of 71, like we talked about the other day. The Beis Din of 71 sitting in the lushkas hagozis, he goes. They paskin in the halacha a certain way, and he goes and paskins differently. He goes and tells other people and paskins differently to other people, and they go and follow him. If he were to do the same thing against one of the local Bata Dinim of 23, nothing would happen. So therefore, we learn from that. Therefore, that the Navi Sheker also has to be judged by the Beis Din of also has to be judged by the Beis Din of 71. Okay, the Gemara asks, "V'ho hazodik, what do you mean, though? When it comes to where does it say the word bezodin in connection with the zaken mamre? It says it in connection with when he does wrong, when he disobeys the Beis Din. The pasuk says va'isha shayaseh. So actually, what the pasuk says is va'isha shayaseh bezodin, the person who acts bemazed and does this. Then the pasuk says umesa ishahu. That person is going to have to be executed. So the word hazoda by the zaken mamre is talking about in connection with him being killed. And as far as that, it's enough to have a Beis Din of 23 judges and punishes him. Meaning, when the pasuk is saying When the Pasuk when the Pasuk is talking about the Zoc and Mamre, yes, he has to rebel against the Sanhedrin of 71. But after that, then, when it comes to his punishment, it doesn't have to be done dafka by the Beis Din of 71. It can be done by any Beis Din of 23, anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. So that being the case, then the Gzeira Shavah should tell us that a Navi Sheker also only needs the Beis Din of 23 and not of 71. Ella Omer Resh Lakish, so Resh Lakish says, you're right, we can't use that Gzeira Shavah of Hazada. Rather, we have to use a different Gzeira Shavah, Goma Dover Dover Mehamra Osai. It's true, we have to look at the part of the Psukim that's talking about when the Zoc and Mamre defies the Sanhedrin, and there it uses the word Dover, Ladaber Vasisa Alpihad Dover. It says that you should follow the word that the word, the thing that the Sanhedrin Gdola tells you. And then we have the word dover, where it says by the Novi Sheker, Achanozi Ashiyozul Dover Bishmi. So we have the word dover by the both of them, and we use that Gzeira Shavah. And we say therefore, so just like the Zoc and Mamre has to be rebelling against the base of the Sanhedrin of 71, the same way the Novi Sheker has to be judged because there by him the word dover is in connection with his punishment has to be that he's being punished by the base sin of 71. Well, the Gemara says, the fact is, though, don't we have the fact is we do have that Gzeira Shavah on the word Hazada. Why then aren't we using that to do the other way around? We should have the Zoc and Mamre learn from the Novi Sheker that, in fact, just like we've established now, the Novi Sheker is punished and killed by the Beis Din of 71. Then now we should say that now the Zoc and Mamre also has to get punished by a Beis Din of 71. Maybe we should use that Gzeira Shavah after all. Fine, it's true we couldn't have used it to begin with because in connection with the Zoc and Mamre. It's talking about his punishment, and we were trying to establish the fact that he's who he rebelled against. But fine, now that we've established that the Novi Sheker gets the Beis Din of 71, maybe in fact we do have to use that Gzeira Shavah of Hazada and say that the Zoc and Mamre does as well. And the answer is no. Dover, dover, gomer, hazada, hazada, le gomer. The Tana in our Mishnah had learned the Gzeira Shavah on the words dover, but he had not learned the Gzeira Shavah on the words hazada. And as we know, a Gzeira Shavah, a Kal V'Chomer, a person can judge by himself, because a Kal V'Chomer is purely a logical thing. But a Gzeira Shavah, a person needs to have the Kabbalah from his Rebbeim. And the Tana of our Mishnah did not have that, that Gzeira Shavah, the Kabbalah from his Rebbeim. So Rish Lakish may have Rish Lakish may have not Rish Lakish the Stamma de Gemara may have had that at first, which is why the Gemara assumed that we use that Gzeira Shavah of Hazada, but we're saying the Tana of our Mishnah did not, and he can't come up with it on his own. We find in various places in Shas, we find all over the place that people argue, that Tanoim argue about whether to accept a certain Gzeira Shavah or not, and basically the idea is that they have to have learned it from their Rebbe. So then the question is why one person can't just learn it from another. And there's different points about that. One point is that each Tana was taught that there are a certain number of Gzeira Shavas in Chumash. And therefore he has a, so he has all his slots filled, and therefore he can't accept a new Gzeira Shava because then it would go over the number of slots that that he has. So that would be why he can't accept that Gzeira Shavah. The Yad Rama brings another point as well, which is that the words dover are exactly the same words. The word hazada, after all, is not, it is the same shurish, but it's not exactly the same word, because in one pasuk it's asher yozid, and the other is asher yasa bezodin, and therefore it's not, and sometimes the Gemara will do that. Sometimes the Gemara points out that we can use even a Gzeira Shavah on words that are not at all the same, different shurishim even, but that's when we don't have anything else available. But here, the Yad Rama is learning one possibility is the words yod, the word the Tana holds that the words yod, yozid, and as bezodin are not similar enough. They're not identical enough for us to learn the Gzeira Shavah, and therefore, therefore it's not going to work. Okay, so in any case, so that's what we're left with. So the Zoc and Mamre rebels against the Sanhedrin of 71, but when he gets punished, it's by the Beis Din of 23. It doesn't need the Sanhedrin of 71. And on the other hand, the Navi Sheker, well, he's not rebelling against anybody, he's not rebelling against any base, and he's rebelling against Hashem by giving a false nevuah, but he has to be judged and punished by the base sin of 71. Okay. Next, Veloyas Kohen Gadol. We said the next one who gets judged by the Beis Din of 71 is the Kohen Gadol. If he did something that would make him Chayiv Misa. So the Gemara says, Minahani Mili, where do we know that he has to be judged by the Beis Din of 71? Amar of Ada, da Amar Kra, Amar of Ada Ba'ava, da Amar Kra, Kol HaDavar HaGadol Yavio Elach, as we had at the top of the Amar. The Pasuk says, any big thing they should bring to you, to Moshe. So that means, beside now, that it doesn't just mean any hard case. Now, when we learn Chumash, when we learn Chumash, we learn that we figure, and Rashi explains as much, that it means any difficult case is going to be brought to Moshe. The easier cases, the lower Dayanim can dispose of themselves, but the more complicated ones they need to bring to Moshe. But here the Gemara is understanding that Dvar HaGadol means the matter involving a Gadol, Dvarav Shel Gadol. Any matter involving the Gadol, involving the great person, for example, the Kohen Gadol, as we said at the top of the Amud, the Nasi of a Shevet, needs to be judged by the Sanhedrin Gdela. The Gemara says Mesvi. Mesvi, I have a contradiction on that. A Braisa says Dover Godel, when it says a big thing, means Dover Kosha, means a difficult thing. We have a difficult case that Beis Din is dealing with, and the lower Bata Dinim are not able to figure it out. After Omer Dover Kosha, now you're saying that it means a hard matter. Maybe it actually means, like Rabbi Adaba Ava is saying, that it means the matter involving a great person, involving, for example, the Kohen Godel. And it means that those have to be brought to Moshe. And as the Gemara is going to point out soon, Moshe is considered the equivalent of the Sanhedrin Gdola of 71 all by himself. So this is Yisro's advice. Any small matter you bring to the local Dayanim, and any big matter you bring to Moshe. And so if you're going to say that the word big matter means any hard matter, a few psukim later, when it says what they actually did, how they implemented it, then it says, that's a dover akosha, yiviyu no Moshe, the hard matters they would bring to Moshe. So how did dover akosha omer? So we already see in the pasuk over there that the hard things were being brought to Moshe. So we don't need the earlier pasuk to tell. So when the earlier pasuk says Dover HaGadol, then that would mean that. So the Braisa is saying the other way around, that because later on, when they implemented it, it says Hadavar Akoshi, if you know Moshe, then we're meant to understand that earlier in Yisro's advice, also Hadavar Agadol Yaviu Elecha also means the difficult matters. In other words, the pasuk is telling us what Yisro advised, and then what Yisro advised and what they actually did. So according to this Tana, then it comes out that in fact there's no source to say that you bring the matters of a great person, the matters of a Kohen Gadol, to the national Sanhedrin of 71. So how can Rav Ava say otherwise and contradict the Braisa? And the one answer is Hu da Amar ki hai Tana. Well, Rav Adab Ava holds like a different Tana. There's another Braisa on the subject, which fine. Rav Adab Ava, being an Amora, can't argue with a Tana, but he is allowed to pick sides among Tanoim, so he can find another Braisa that says differently. Well, it says D'Tanya, as we learn in another Braisa, Dover Gadol means Dvarav Shel Gadol. It does in fact mean the matters the matters pertaining to a great man, in this case, to a Kohen Gadol. After Omer Dvarav Shel Gadol, so you're saying it means matters that have to do with a great man. Maybe it actually means difficult matters. No, Kshur Omer Dvarav Akasha. Again, when it says a few psukim later, the hard matters had a Dvarav Kasha Omer. Then there, it's talking about the hard matters. Those have to be brought to Moshe. Homani Makayim Dvarav Gadol. So what does it mean in the earlier pasuk? Dvarav Gadol Dvarav Shel Gadol means the matters belonging to the great person. So fine. So this second Braisa says that, in fact, the two expressions mean different things. Dover Gadol means matters involving a Gadol. Those have to be brought to Moshe. And Dover Katan would be matters involving anything else. A few psukim later, when it says Dover Akosha, Yaviu no Moshe, the hard matters they bring to Moshe, that means exactly that. Hard matters, things that the lower Bata Dinim were not able to resolve. Okay. Well, the Gemara says Vahai Tana Trei Kroi Lomali. Well, then we have to ask, according to the first Tana, why would the pasuk need to repeat itself? If according to him, Dover HaGadol and Dover HaKasha both mean the same thing, a hard matter, then why repeat it? And the Gemara says, okay, Chad Tzava Ba'amal, Chad La'asara. Fine, one of them is to tell us the Tzava, the commandment, the advice really of Yisro that this should be done, and the other one is saying how they actually carried it out. V'idoch, well, what does the second Tana say to that? He says in Kain lichtav oi godol godol oi kosher kosher. Well, in that case, then fine. But the Torah should have used the same expression in both psukim. It should have said in either davar godol in both pasuk or davar kosher in both psukim. My godol, my kosher. Why instead in one place does the Torah say godol and then a few psukim later kosher? Shema min atarti. Therefore, you can learn both of it. You can learn that. Both kinds of things were brought to Moshe, difficult things that the lower Bati Dinim couldn't resolve, and also anything to begin with, which applies to a great person, namely in this case the Kohen Gadol. There is a drasha, by the way, there's a drashadik explanation on this that Yisro is thinking in a mentality where the difference as far as the importance of a case is going to be the amount of money that's at stake. So there's an explanation, I don't remember the source of it, that says that Yisro is saying, Hadavar HaGadol, matters involving a big thing, like a lot of money, those should be brought to you, Moshe, to begin with. Davar cotton, small things where it involves a small amount of money, those the lower Bati Dinim can handle themselves. Whereas that's not so, as we learned previously in our perek, din pruta, din me'amana, a dayan has to treat just as seriously a case involving one pruta as a case involving 100 mana. So therefore, so instead, when they actually implemented it, then Moshe does differently than Yisro's advice. Namely, he has that the hard things, no matter how little money is at stake, are brought to him, and the easy things, no matter how much money is at stake, are dealt with by the lower Dayanim. But here, the Gemara is not using that explanation, and instead, it's saying that when it was a, when instead we're saying. That in fact there was no difference between Yisro's advice and Moshe's implementation of it. The difference is, according to one Tana, we're saying the same thing in both places. We're just saying it was advised so and so, and it was implemented so and so. As opposed to, according to the other Tana, we're saying that it was advised that there was an advice and there was an implementation, and each one is mentioning a different detail. One mentioning about the difficulty of the case, and one mentioning about who is being judged in the case. Then in both of those cases, those have to go to Moshe, who stands in the place of the Sanhedrin of 71. Lahavdil, by the way, you have a similar concept. For example, in American law, there are certain cases that are dealt with by lower courts, and only if there's an appeal or whatever, it may go all the way to the Supreme Court. And then you have certain cases where the Supreme Court has what they call original jurisdiction, meaning that to begin with, such a case is brought to them. So Lahavdil, we have similarly over here. There are certain cases that to begin with, the Sanhedrin Gdola has original jurisdiction, and one of those is the Kohen Gadol. Next. We said ein motzi in chola. We said another. Oh, sorry, I skipped. So the Gemara says, "Boy Rabbalazer, shoda shel kohen gadol bekama." Suppose that an ox belonging to a kohen gadol killed somebody, how or any other animal, like we learned yesterday. How many people, how many dayanim are needed to judge the case? The point is, we learned yesterday there's a hekesh between the killing of the shur and the killing of the owner, were the owner to be chayiv misa. We said we have the pasuk asher yisokol v'gam ba'olav yomos. We said v'gam ba'olav yomos doesn't mean that the owner was actually executed. It just means that we make a hekesh between if he were to be versus his shur. That in both cases you need a beis din of 23. So now the question becomes: Lemisas b'ilim d'day midaminin lay. Well, are we comparing the when we make the hekesh, are we making it to his own to his own misa? Well, therefore, since we just said that this Kohen Gadol needs to be judged by a beis din of 71, then therefore, meaning his shor also needs to be a dumah lemisas b'ilim d'alma midaminin lay. Or maybe we only compare it to the misa of a regular person. A regular person would only need a beis din of 23 to judge his shor. So therefore, the Kohen Gadol, even though yes, he's the Kohen Gadol, but nevertheless, maybe his shor requires only 23. Well, the Gemara says, Omar Abaya points out, now, given that you're asking about his shur, where there's an issue of misa involved, then it seems that Rabbi Lozer considers that anything involving money, mammon of the Kohen Gadol, is automatically, there's not even a question, is automatically going to be judged by a beis din of 23. And the question is only whether the shur, since there's a chiyuv misa involved, is maybe different. Well, the Gemara says Pshita. Yeah, why would we think that money involving the Kohen Gadol should be different than anyone else's? It's one thing when the Kohen Gadol himself is Chayiv Misa, or maybe Malchus, fine. It's one thing when his Shur is Chayiv Misa, we can talk about whether it needs 23 or 71. Why would there be a Hava Amina that we would think that when it comes to his money, you should need a larger basting? is mild attainment, because otherwise you would have thought Hoyo. We just said that the pasuk says any matter of the gadol is to be brought to you, Moshe, who stands in place of the Sanhedrin of 71, and you would think it means kol dvarav shel gadol. Maybe it means anything involving the gadol. So maybe indeed any case, not just dinin nefashos, but maybe dinin mamonos of a kohen gadol, always requires a beis din of 71. Kamash v'lan, therefore, Abaye is telling us that no, there's no question when it comes to regular dini mamonos of a kohen gadol, you don't need the beis din of 71. But when it comes to when there's missa involved, where again the kohen gadol's missa himself would require the beis din of 71, maybe his shor does too, and then the Gemara leaves the question unanswered. Okay, next we said ein metzien chola. Another thing that the Sanhedrin Gedola needs to that we need the full Sanhedrin Gedola for is for the Jewish people to go to war. So we need the Sanhedrin of seven of the Sanhedrin Gedola of 71 to approve them going to, well, the Mishnah had said actually the Mochemes HaRashus. The Mishnah had said to go out to a Mochemes HaRashus. Now you have in Halacha, you have as follows. There's Mochemes Choiva, a Mochama, which is absolutely required up here Halacha. That includes the wars to conquer Eretz Yisrael from the seven nations and the wars against Amalek. Then you have Mochemes Mitzvah. You have other kinds of wars that are a mitzvah to do. For example, when enemies are attacking the Jewish people. And then you have Mochemes HaRashus, which is where the Jewish people, or the as we're saying over here, the king and the Sanhedrin, etc., decide we need to go to war we're not in a dangerous situation, but rather in order to expand the borders of Eretz Yisrael and prevent the and proactively prevent the surrounding nations from attacking us or whatever. So that kind of thing is called the Mochemes HaRashus. So the Mishnah had said to go to a Mochemes HaRashus, you need the permission of the Sanhedrin of 71. So the Gemara says, Menahani Mili, where do we get that from? Amar Rabba Bahu, Da Amar Kra, because the Pasuk says, V'lifnei Elazar HaKoyen Yamod, the Pasuk says about Yeshua, he should stand in front of Elazar HaKoyen. So the whole Pasuk goes like this, V'lifnei Elazar HaKoyen Yamod, he should stand in front of Elazar HaKoyen, V'shoa lo b'mishpat ha'urim lifnei Hashem, and Elazar will ask for the judgment of the Urim v'Tumim, before Hashem, al piv yetzu, on his word, they will go out, val pivya voyu, and on his word they would come back in. Who he v'chol bnei Yisrael itoy, and the entire Jewish people with him, v'chol ha'eda, and the whole eda. So now the Gemara is going to douse in the end of that pasuk. Who zemelech, when it says he refers to the king. Now here in context we're talking about Yeshua, and on the side of here actually there's a question that what do you mean mitzvah liyashiv? The question is the pasuk is talking about Yeshua. So Rashi points that out actually in Yuma, that on the face of it, how can we learn from that the king, when we're talking about over here Yeshua? So to a certain extent Yeshua had the function of a king. He wasn't officially chosen as king, but in fact, so Rashi in Yuma, where this Gemara is also brought, says that on the face of it the pasuk is talking about Yeshua, not about the king. But nevertheless, though, the Rashbam and Baba Basra points out that Yeshua did in fact have to a certain extent the status of a king. Anyway, so you have him, Zemelech, v'chol bnei Yisrael ito, when the pasuk says all the Jewish people with him, Zem Meshuach Melchama, that refers to the Kohen who's anointed for the war, where you have in Parashas Shoftim, where he's the one who goes and makes the announcements that anybody who built a new house or married a new wife, etc., goes home from the army. So when it says v'chol bnei Yisrael ito, refers to him, where he represents the Jewish people. Rashi and Yuma explains the entire Jewish people follow him into battle, and therefore he can be called the Chol Bnei Yisrael Itoy, the Chol Eda. And when it says the entire Eda, as we learned already in the Mishnah, the word Eda, the congregation, means the Sanhedrin. So we see that all of those are needed. Now, the point is, we see that the national Sanhedrin is needed. Rabbeinu Yonah points out, on the face of it, the pasuk is talking about the wars against the seven nations, because in Yeshua's times they weren't doing Mochamas Rashus. They had to conquer, and they had to conquer Eretz Yisrael from the seven nations. Now that's not a Mochamas Rashus, that's a mitzvah, Mochamas Mitzvah, or Mochamas Choiva. So how is the Gemara trying to learn from that you need the Sanhedrin of 71 for Mochamas Rashus, when we're saying over here we're talking about a Mochamas Mitzvah or Mochamas Choiva? So, Rabbeinu Yonah says, listen, the Gemara is anyway going to slog up this limud for a different pasuk. But another point is also, he says, since we're mentioning over here the Moshuach Milchama, now by Mochamas Mitzvah, you don't need the Moshuach Milchama, because again, the purpose of the Moshuach Milchama is to tell the people, anybody who recently was Mekaddish a woman, or any person who recently planted a vineyard, etc., goes home from war. Now those exemptions don't in fact apply to a Mochamas Mitzvah. They apply only to a Mochamas Rishus. So therefore, if we're talking about over here, about the Moshuach Milchama being involved, necessarily we have to say that the Pasuk is talking about a Milchamas HaRashus. Even though in context we are talking about Yeshua and the Jewish people conquering Eretz Yisrael, which is Milchamas Choyva, nevertheless we can also learn from it, for we can also learn from it that a Milchamas HaRashus has the same rules that that you need the that you need that you need the Sanhedrin of 71. Then he goes and points out, actually, Rabbeinu Yonah goes and points out that that maybe actually you did need the Moshuach Milchama even by a Milchamas Mitzvah. And he says that he brings from the Smag to that effect, and he says, okay, fine, maybe in fact at least he had to tell them the first part that you should that don't be afraid when you go to war. It's true, maybe he doesn't have to mention the exemptions because those don't apply to a Milchamas Mitzvah, but maybe at least he has to give that pep talk to them, Shema Yisrael, Atam Krev Mayom, LaMochama Aleivechem, etc. Okay, so therefore, so we see the Sanhedrin. But the Gemara asks, "V'dumal Sanhedrin who d'kamar Rachmana d'lishaylo b'urim b'tumim?" Fine, the Sanhedrin has to be involved, but maybe the pasuk just means that the Sanhedrin has to be the ones to ask the Urim b'tumim. The Urim b'tumim, after all, are meant for people who represent the tzibur to ask. So maybe all it means is the Sanhedrin Gdola are among the ones who are able to ask the Urim b'tumim. The king, the Kohen Gadol, and the king, the Mashiach Milchama, and the Sanhedrin are allowed to. In other words, the point of the pasuk would be you shouldn't think that just any old person can walk over and have the Kohen Gadol do the Urim b'tumim for him. It has to be somebody who's doing it on behalf of the Jewish people, and the Sanhedrin would be such a group. But maybe that doesn't mean that you need the permission of the Sanhedrin to go to war. So Ella Kihod Omar of Chonam Babizna Omar of Shimon Chasida. Rather, we can learn it out from the following story that Rab Acha Babizna said in the name of Rab Shimon Chasida, describing how they would go to war in the times of David HaMelech. And based on that, we're going to understand where we see where we're going to quote a pasuk from Divrei HaYomim. And based on that, we're going to understand that the Sanhedrin has to be involved in the decision-making process to go to war for a Milchamas HaRashus. And there, we're not going to have the problem that we just said from Rabbeinu Yonah, that the pasuk that we just quoted is about a Milchamas Mitzvah. Because in fact, the pasuk that we're going to quote about, the discussion that we're going to quote about, is going to in fact be about a Milchamas HaRashus. So, like this. Sort of Achaba business says, Kino hoyatolo David. There was a harp hanging over David's bed, with the holes and the strings of it turned in the direction when midnight would come, the north wind would start blowing on it, because the Gemara mentions elsewhere that the wind comes from different quarters during different times of the day, and at midnight at Chatzos the wind is coming from the north. So therefore, he had it turned in just such a way that at midnight when the north wind starts blowing, then it would start strumming on the strings. So therefore, it would start playing on its own, and it would wake David up. The Gemara mentions in Bracha, so right away David would get up and start learning Torah until Alosa Shachar. The Gemara in Brachos tells us actually that the first half of the night he also wouldn't be fully sleeping; he would be dozing he would be dozing. The Gemara says in Brachos like a horse, so he'd be sleeping a little bit, less than half an hour at a time, and then he would wake up and learn Torah, and then go back to sleep for a little bit until Chatzos, and then he would be waking up and he would be waking up and staying up the rest of the night to learn Torah. Kivin sha'ola omer ha'shachar, once Alois ha'shachar came, nichnasu chachmei Yisrael etzlo, the chachamim would come to consult with him. They have to work out the business, the agenda of that day. So they would come to see him at Alois ha'shachar. The Gemara mentions at the end of the at the end at the end of the piece over here, at the end of the story, that that David says on himself, or Ira Shachar, I will wake up the dawn. Meaning, in other words, I'm never asleep when the dawn comes. I'm always waking up the dawn in the sense that I'm up before it. So everybody else sleeps at least till dawn, and I'm up before that from Chatzos, as we're saying over here. So the Chachmei Yisrael would come to him to discuss state matters. And so Omrulloy, so here was one example of one time what something they said to him. They said to him, Adonenu HaMelech, your Jewish people need parnosa. People are not making ends meet. So Omalahem, so he tells them, Omalahem, so he tells them, well, what's the problem? Go have parnosa from one another. Let Jews do business with one another. Some people will be buying, some people will be selling, and you'll make a profit that way. Or actually, what he's saying is not so much buying and selling, but he's saying let the rich people support the poor people. Omruloi, so they answered him, Ein ha-koimetz masbia esari, a handful of food doesn't satisfy a lion, ve'ein ha-bur mismale m'chul yosei, and a pit cannot be filled from chul yosei. So in other words, so the first part of it is they're saying a lion, you give a lion a little bit, a little handful of straw or something, or a small amount, it's not going to be enough for it. The same way the Jewish people have tremendous needs, and the amount that the rich people can give the poor people is really not going to be enough. The second metaphor they're using, Ein HaBur Mismale M'Chul Yosei. So there's a few different explanations of what Chul Yosei means. Rashi over here says that it means if you were to take a deep pit and you were to pull out a clod of dirt from the bottom of it and then throw it back in, it wouldn't make the pit any fuller. So in other words, what's going to happen? You know, the rich people don't have enough resources to support all the poor people. So therefore, so it's not going to be enough. For it's not going to be enough for the rich people to support the poor people. Tosfos argues on that and gives a couple of other explanations of cholya. One of them is that cholya means the lip that they would put when you have a well. You put a wall around it of dirt and stones and whatever. If you were to take that and try to fill up the pit from it wouldn't fill up completely. Then Tosfos gives another explanation that Chul Yosei actually means the water source from which the pit fills. You have an underground aquifer, an underground water source from which the pit fills, but it's never going to completely fill up from that. So the same way, the rich people are not completely able to fill up all the lack that the poor people have. So as far as the Koimetz, Rashi and Brochus brings another possibility as well. Which is the word koimetz can only also related to an Aramaic word for a grasshopper, meaning in other words, if you were to take one grasshopper and feed it to a lion, it obviously wouldn't satisfy it. And the same way, the small amount, relatively speaking, that the rich people can give the poor people is not really enough for them. So the point is, in other words, they're saying you're telling us that the rich people should support the poor people. It's really not going to work. Marshall explains also the idea is the reason why they're using two metaphors is they're saying, listen, sometimes you have a person might be able to get by with a little bit of tzedakah, but then there are some poor people who expect more than that. So they're going to be like a lion where he's not satisfied just with one handful, he's going to need a lot more. Okay, so you're going to say the rich people are going to give the poor people a lot and then give them everything they need. The fact is, Ein HaBur Mismale M'Chul Yosei, you can't really fill up completely the pit from the dirt of it. And Rashi and Brachas, Marsha brings from Rashi and Brachas another explanation. If you were to take dirt, it's similar to his explanation over here. If you take dirt from one side of the pit and use it to try to fill up the other side, the pit's never going to be full. And the same way, the rich people don't really have the ability to give the poor people everything they want. So what are we going to do? Omalahem, so he tells them, L'chu pishtu yedeichem b'gdud. Well, then go stretch out your hands against the bands of goyim who are invading Eretz Yisrael. During this period, we find in different places where there were bands and units of goyish soldiers from Amalek and from different other nations that were sometimes raiding Eretz Yisrael and then causing trouble. And sometimes, among other things, so everything they take is getting lost to the Jewish people. And therefore, so David is saying, I understand the problem is because we have these little terrorist groups or whatever that are operating in different places in Eretz Yisrael. Go eliminate them, and then the economy will be much better. So in other words, go do a milchemes harishus. And Maharsho adds to that, he's also saying that if you're telling me that, listen, you know what, the better thing would be pishtu yedeichem, could be stretching out your hands to give tzedakah generously. But if they're not going to be able to do that, then fine, the next best thing is stretch out your hands to fight against these gdudim, against these bands of roving goyish soldiers. Okay, well then, miyad yoytzin b'Achitofel. So right away, they would go get advice from Achitofel, who was David's chief advisor, about the strat about whether to go to war and the strategy that they should use. V'nimlochen b'Sanhedrin. They would also consult with the Sanhedrin to get permission, which is, as the Mishnah said, that the Sanhedrin has to be involved. V'sholem b'Urim v'Tumim. And then they would ask the Urim v'Tumim to see whether they're going to be successful. Another point is also they would also have the purpose was the Sanhedrin not only should be giving them permission, but also the Sanhedrin would be davening for them as well. Because after all, even the Urim v'Tumim tells them they're going to be successful in war. You often have casualties, Rahman al-Islam, so they can still ask the Sanhedrin to daven for the soldiers. Okay, but primarily the point is that they're asking the Sanhedrin for permission. So we see therefore that the Mochamas al-Rashus requires permission from the Sanhedrin. Amr Rabbi Yosef Maikra, so Rabbi Yosef says, where's a pasuk where we see that there was that order of things? The pasuk of Achrei Achisofel, after Achitofel, Bnei Yehu ben Yehoyada. After him was Bnei Yehu ben Yehoyada, Ve'ev Yasser, Vesarat Saval, Amalach Yoav, and the king's general Yoav. So in the simple sense, we would understand the pasuk as saying that after Achitofel in rank, or after Achitofel died or whatever, then these people took over. But here the Gemara is doubting that it means achar in the sense of after they talked to Achitofel, then each of these people plays their roles. Achitofel refers to the advisor. V'cheinu Omer, as we find, the pasuk describes about him. When Achitofel would give advice, it was as good as the advice that you would get from the Urim v'Tumim. In fact, one of the Rishonim says, I think it's the Rashba, says the other way around, actually, that they would ask Achitofel, and then they would ask the Urim v'Tumim, and the Urim v'Tumim would basically just confirm and say whatever Achitofel told you was right, effectively. So in other words, what he was saying was as great as the Urim v'Tumim, as reliable as the Urim v'Tumim. Bnei Yehu ben Yehoyada is a Sanhedrin. When it says Bnei Yehu ben Yehoyada, refers to the Sanhedrin, because the pasuk. The pasuk mentions that so as the Gemara is going to bring in a minute, and the Gemara is going to bring in the next line, that Bnei Yehu ben Yehoyada was the muflash of the Sanhedrin. He was the leader of the Sanhedrin. He was the Av Beis Din. Ev Yosser, Elo Urim V'Tumim, and the word of Yosser refers to the Kohen Gadol who's wearing the Urim V'Tumim. V'cheinu Omer, how do we know that Bnei Yehu ben Yehoyada is in charge of the Sanhedrin? V'cheinu Omer, Bnei Yehu ben Yehoyada, ala kresi v'ala plesi. That Bnei Yehu ben Yehoyada is in charge of, or is above, the kresi and the plesi. Now, in the simple sense, Mefarshim talk about kresi and plesi are certain units in the army, and Bnei Yehu ben Yehoyada is the leader of them. But the Gemara is understanding that the word kresi or plesi actually refers to the Sanhedrin, and we're saying that he's al ha-kresi va-plesi, va-ala-plesi, then it means that he's above them, namely that he's the muflash of the Beis Din, he's the leader of the Sanhedrin. Well, the Gemara says, v'lo manik rashman kresi u-plesi. Why the Sanhedrin? Or actually, no. So there are actually two different major explanations over here among Rishonim. Is it that the kresi or plesi refers to the majority understanding over here, which is how Rashi explains it, and the way many Mefarshim explain it, is that kresi or plesi actually refers to the Urim v'Tumim. So the Urim v'Tumim, and when we're saying Bnei Yehu ben Yehoyada is ala kresi v'ala plesi, means ahead of the Urim v'Tumim. So therefore, so it would mean, so and the crazy or plesi, as the Gemara is going to understand it now, is referring to the Urim v'Tumim, and we're saying Bnei Yehoyada is ahead of them, meaning that they have to consult with him first, he being the Av Beis Din. There are Mefarshim, Rabbeinu Yonah, and others that ask on that and have a number of problems with that. First of all, Tosfos actually points out one problem is that the way the pasuk is quoting the Gemara is not accurate. The actual pasuk doesn't say Achrei Achitofel Bnei Yehu ben Yehoyada. It actually says Yehoyada ben Bnei Yehu. It switches around the father and the son's names. So where are we even getting that Bnei Yehu ben Yehoyada, where we're saying that he was ala kresi v'ala plesi, that he has anything to do with this? So Tosfos says apparently they're father and son. You have Yehoyada, and then you have his son Bnei Yehu, and each of them in his times was the head of the Sanhedrin. And then Tosfos points out there may have been a chain of fathers and sons. There may have been a Bnei Yehu who was the father of Yehoyada, and he had this role early in David's reign, and then later on there's Yehoyada ben Bnei Yehu, and later on in Shlomo's times we have Bnei Yehu ben Yehoyada again, because you would have a grandfather, a grandson, and you'd have a grandfather, a son, and a grandson. In addition, some of the Mefarshim say that Yehoyada Kohen Gadol from the middle of the second Beis Hamikdash may have also been a descendant of this family. So there's a lot of possibilities over here. But anyway, the point is, as far as when we're saying Vayahu Bnei Yada is ala kresi v'haplesi, then it may mean that there's two possibilities of how to understand it. One is that kresi uplesi, which is how Rashi learns it, that kresi uplesi means the urim v'tumim. So he's above them, meaning that he's consulted first before they go before that. So he, as the head of the Sanhedrin, is consulted first before we go to the urim v'tumim. But then another different explanation actually is that that kresi v'haplesi means the Sanhedrin, and it means that he's in charge of them, and then Avyasa is the Kohen Gadol. So the Lama Nikra Shman Kresi Uplesi. Why is the Sanhedrin called Kresi Uplesi? Kresi should curse in Divrahim. They're called Kresi because they say very exactly the words. Kursin literally means they cut. So they cut and they establish their words very precisely. And placey because they act in a wondrous way. So if you're talking about the Urim V'Tumim, it means the Urim V'Tumim's advice is always exact and always wondrously correct. And if it means the Sanhedrin, then it means also that they're able to paskin the halacha and they're able to explain everything very, very clearly and judge din emes. So Rabbeinu Yonah mentions that point that can be another meaning he brings from the Aruch actually that the crazy or placey over here means the Sanhedrin. And the point is, Ben Yehoshua ben Yehoyada, then we're saying is Al, he's on them, meaning that he's the head of the Sanhedrin. Whereas again, according to Rashi, the vote is that Ben Yehoshua ben Yehoyada, we know that he's the head of the Sanhedrin. We know that from other places. And then we're saying over here, he's Allah, crazy about placey. He's above the crazy of placey, meaning in other words, that he's consulted, he in his role as the head of the Sanhedrin is consulted before the Urim V'Tumim. And then we had Avyasa we know for sure was the Kohen Gadol wearing the Urim V'Tumim. So we have that order. After that, then Yoav, the general, starts playing his role and starts going to war. So we see that the order was this. So we see that the Sanhedrin Gdola had to be involved over there. We see that from this pasuk. So therefore, that's where we're getting that the Sanhedrin Gdola has to be involved, has to give permission in order for them to go to a Milchamas HaRoshos. Next, so now we mentioned at the beginning of the story that David HaMelech would wake up before Alois HaShachar. Amar Rav Yitzchok b'rei de Rav Ada v'amila Amar Rav Yitzchok bar Avadimi. My kra, where's a posik that we see this? David says on himself, Ura Chavodi, wake up my glory, which means my neshama. Ura HaNevel v'chiner, wake up navel and harp. Navel is another type of musical instrument. Or Ira Shachar, I will wake up the dawn. So in other words, David is saying that I'm always awake before the dawn. On, like as if I'm the one who's waking up the dawn rather than the other way around. And then else Rashi mentions on Amud Aleph, there's another pasuk where David says on himself, Chatzos Laila Okum Lahodis Lacha, I wake up at Chatzos in order to praise you, Hashem. So the Gemara in Brachas explains, as we said before, that up until midnight he would doze, he would sleep a little bit here and there, and then after Chatzos he would get up and continuously study Torah until dawn. Next, the Mishnah had said another thing that we need the Sanhedrin of 71 to be involved in is Ve'en Mesifin al-Ir. We do not add to the size of the city of Yerushalayim or to the size of the Azara. We need the Sanhedrin of 71 to be involved with that. As we learned the other day, not only do they need to be involved to give permission, they actually have to be present there for the procession where they actually do this. We'll learn in Masech Shavuos later this year, Be'ez Hashem, the exact details of how they did it. But the point is that the Sanhedrin actually joins in the procession going around the walls of the Azara or the walls of Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, Minohani Mili. Where do we know that the Sanhedrin of 71 has to be involved with this? Omer of Shimi Bachia, Omer Krob, because the pasuk says, K'chol Hashani Mara Oischa, Hashem says to Moshe in Parshas Truma, according to everything that I show you, Eis Tavnis HaMishkan, the structure of the Mishkan, etc., and of all the Kalim, V'chein Tasu, and like this, is what you should do. So that means the Duras Haboyim, that means for future generations. The word V'chein Tasu are not needed to tell us to build the Mishkan. Of course, they're going to do whatever Hashem tells them. It means you should do the same kind of thing in future generations. So that means the same way as when the so the same way as when the Mishkan was built was under the supervision of Moshe, and Moshe is in place of the Sanhedrin Gdola, the same way in future generations, when you're going to when you're going to be building or enlarging the Beis HaMikdash, it has to be under the direction of the Sanhedrin Gdola. So Tosfos points out that the fact is, you know, when it comes to adding to the size of the city, you also need, it was as we said, we said you also need not only the king, you also need this, you not need not only the Sanhedrin, you need the king, you need the Urim V'Tumim and all of that. So what about over here? Maybe you should. The fact is, over here you need all of that. But when it comes to, for example, we're going to talk about here making new Kalim for the Mishkan, you don't need all that kind of thing. In the same way, for example. That, and there are other things as well where you don't need all of those. So Tosfos points out that when it says the fact is the pasuk says that the pasuk says oisam, the pasuk says that you need to the pasuk says you need to make them the kalim, and we can learn from that that we can learn from that that it means only that means the kalim do not require all these things. They don't need you don't need the Sanhedrin of 71 every time you're going to make a new keli, but you do need it when you're enlarging the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says Meisvi, I have a contradiction then. Or massive Rava, rather. Rava points out a contradiction. This is what you should do in future generations. So massive Rava says, I have a contradiction on that. A Braisa says, "Kol ha-kelim she'asa Moshe, all the kelim that Moshe originally made, mishichos and mekadashtan. When you anoint them, then they become holy, and now they can be used as klei shares, and now they have the dinim of klei shares, as eventually we'll learn when we get to Seder Kodeshim Be'ez Hashem, that, for example, anything that goes into a klei shares becomes kodesh." And now you can't redeem it, etc. You have a bunch of dinim that apply to the clay shoris. So to begin with, that was each one was anointed with Shemen HaMishcha, and that's how they get their status. But after that, Avodas and Mechanachton. After that, you don't use the Shemen HaMishcha. Instead, each time you have it, you need a new keli. The first time you use it, it automatically becomes Kaddish. So why? So Zavamai, the name of Achen Tassu Abayim. Why shouldn't we say that? It means that the same way as it had to be done the original time, the same way it has to be done now, and that would mean every Kaylee has to be anointed the same way as they were originally. And the answer is Shiny Hossam, Dom Akravim, Shochem, Vaikadash Oysam. Because there we have another Pasuk. So here is that Oysam that Tosfos was referring to. The Pasuk says, he anointed them and he made them holy. So that word Oysam is a mute. Oysam below the Mashiach. Only those, the only those, the kalim that were made and put into use at that time required Mashiach, but not the words, but not ones in future generations. So the Gemara says, why? Ve'ema oysam. Maybe what it means is that fine, those original ones had to be anointed in order to work. After that, you have a choice. You could anoint them or you could use them the first time. And that would mean, in other words, in other words, we still would apply the V'chein Tasu as much as possible. We would say that we do want, there should be Mashiach. However, instead of Mashiach, fine, because you have Vayim Shochem, Vayim Kaddish Oysam, which is a miut, then instead you could say that you could use them the first time and it works. But how do we know? You're saying that in future generations, only using them works. Mashiach does not work. Well, why not? Why shouldn't we at least say that it should be similar to the way it was originally? Amar Papa. So the Papa answers to Amakra, Ashi Shor Subam BaKodesh. Yes, but we have a pasuk that mentions about the kelim with which they serve in the Kodesh, in the holy place. Meaning a kosev tlon b'shiros. So the pasuk is clearly making it depend on them being used to serve in the Beis Mikdash. So therefore, it's so unlike the first time where all that was needed was to anoint them. Here, you actually need to use them for the avoda, and otherwise, it's not going to work because of this pasuk Ashi Shor Subam BaKodesh. So it's clear that only the first time where did Mashiach work, never again. So the Gemara says, Ela oisam lamali. Well, now that we have that, what do we need the miut from the word oisam? And the answer is, Ilav oisam, hava amin. If it weren't for that, we would have thought, L'doris v'mashicha uva'avoida. You would have thought in the future, you need both. You need to anoint them with Shemen HaMishcha, and you need to do the avoida with them. You would say, because you have both psukim, I'll show you shows some b'makodesh, doch zivachein tasu. And after all, you also have the pasuk that says this is how you should do, and that means that just like the ones now, you need Mashiach, the ones in later generations do also. So maybe actually it would mean that you need both. So kosa rahmana oisam. Therefore, the pasuk says the word oisam, making it clear. Oisam b'mashicha v'lo l'deris b'mashicha. Only those, the ones that were started to be used in Moshe's times, need to be anointed, but not in future generations at all. So only use, only using them, only shirus, only shirus causes them to become kaddish. Nothing else. So the bottom line is that we learn from that that even though yes it says v'chein tasu, nevertheless that doesn't apply to how the kelim become kodesh. That is going to depend on, that's just going to depend on them being used. But other than that, we do use the word v'chein tasu to mean that the enlargement of the Bais HaMikdash, just like the original construction of the Mishkan, had to be done under the supervision of Moshe. And Moshe, as the Gemara is going to point out further on, counts as the, in, instead of the Sanhedrin of 71, the same way the in future building or enlarging the Bais HaMikdash requires the Sanhedrin of 71. Next, the Mishnah had said, "Ve'ein oisin Sanhedrois chula." Another thing that you need of the Sanhedrin of 71 is in order to establish Sanhedrins for the "ein oisin Sanhedrois." You don't establish the smaller Sanhedrins for except with the basin of 71. So they need to be present. In other words, they need to be involved when you're setting up the when you're setting up the Sanhedrins when you send the Enos and Sanhedrias l'Shvatim is the expression of the Mishnah. You don't set up Sanhedrins for the Shvatim only by the Beis Din of 71. So the Gemara says, so for Menolon, where do we know that from? And the answer is Kedashkachon Moshe, like we find by Moshe, where he's the Uki Sanhedrois, he's the one who set up the smaller Sanhedrins on Yisro's advice. And Moshe all by himself is equal to the Sanhedrin Gedolah. Rashi says because he was appointed, he was appointed by Hashem, and he was judging with he was appointed directly by Hashem, and he was judging with Ruach HaKodesh, which no future generation could do. So therefore, so he counts as the equivalent of the Sanhedrin Gedolah in Yerushalayim. Okay. So therefore, in future generations, you need the Sanhedrin of 71 to be involved. So Gemara says, Tanan Abbanan, Minayin Shemabidin Shoftim Yisrael. How do we know that we have to set up Shoftim judges for the Jewish people? Tamad Loma, Shoftim Titin. Now the Pasuk says, you have the Pasuk at the beginning of Parashat Shoftim. Shoftim v'shoftim titin l'cha b'chol sha'aracha. You should set up judges and officers for yourself in all of your gates, meaning in all of your cities. Asher Hashem alakach ha'noisin l'cha, that Hashem gives you. So we see, so first it says you have to have Shoftim Titin, means you have to have Shoftim, you have to have judges. Shoitrim li'stromenayin. How do we know you also have to have shoitrim? Where the shoitrim, Rashi describes, their job is, for example, to beat anybody who doesn't listen to the dayanim. So in general, they're like the police or the court bailiffs or whatever. They're the enforcement arm of the Sanhedrin. The Rebbe pointed out once in a sicha, you know, we say v'ashiva sheftayich kavod yishoyna, and we say in davening v'ashiva sheftayich kavod yishoyna, no mention of shoytrim, because we'll also love it when Mashiach comes. We won't need shoytrim to enforce the law. Everybody's naturally going to listen to what Hashem says, but we still need shoftim, because the shoftim's job is not so much to lay down the law. It's more this, you know, you have a question in halacha, you have a dispute between people, then you have to have shoftim resolve it. But you don't have to have an enforcement mechanism, la'asid love, and therefore doesn't mention Shoytun. So Shoytrim Lisrominayan. How do we know you have to set up Shoytrim among the Jewish people? Tamalama Shoytrim Titin, because the Pasuk says also you have to appoint Shoytrim. Shoftim the whole shavit v'shavit minayin. Next, how do we know that you have Shoftim for every shavit? Now, what does that mean, Shoftim for every shavit? On the face of it, if they have a basin in every city, what do they need Shoftim for the shavit for? So Tosfos explains, let's say that you have a city where there are two people of two different shvatim live, then each one is going to need their own based in. So there is that consideration. The Ramban also on the Pasuk there at the beginning of Shoftim mentions that point as well, that maybe it's only for that. On the other hand, a number of Mephoshim explain that actually what it would mean is, so the Ramban also says that, listen, if they have to make a takana for their shevet, for example, then they're the ones who make it for the shevet. They're the equivalent of Sanhedrin Gola for the shevet. But there are Mephoshim who explain in more detail that what you have is exactly that. Their job is to judge anybody within the Shevet, If a lower beis din couldn't handle it, as opposed to then you have if there's an argument between Shvatim, then it has to go to the Sanhedrin Gerler. Rabbi Yaakov Emden, in fact, points out that was at the root of the whole thing in Pilegish Begiva, when after you had the whole incident in Pilegish Begiva in Giva over there with the Pilegish, where the other Shvatim are outraged about it and they send a message to Shevet Binyamin, you have to hand over these people to be punished by the Sanhedrin Gerler, and Shevet Binyamin basically says, "Mix out of our business. We'll handle this ourselves." Basically, that boiled down to the question: on the one hand, they're within the Shevet, so therefore they Binyamin held they should be judged by the Beis Din of that Shevet. Whereas the other Shvatim held that since this was an argument between two Shvatim, then therefore it has to be handled by the Sanhedrin Gdola. And the result was, unfortunately, there was a civil war and everything developed from there. All right, the Gemara continues. How do we know that every Shevet has to have their Shoftim, their Beis Din? The Pasuk says you have to have Shoftim for your Shvatim. How do we know you also have to have shoytrim for each shevet? Tamad lema shoytrim l'shvatecha, because the pasuk also says you need to have shoytrim officers for each shevet. Shoftim l'chol ir ve'ir minayin. How do we know in turn that you have to have shoftim for every city, a beis din for every city? Tamad lema shoftim l'sharecha. Therefore, the pasuk says you have to have shoftim for your gates, meaning your individual cities. So you need that as well. Shoytrim l'chol ir v'ir minayin. How do we know in every city you need to have shoytrim? Tamar lama shoytrim l'shvatecha. Rabbi Yehuda omer echad memuna al kulan. Rabbi Yehuda says you need to have one beis din in charge of all of them. The Sanhedrin Gdola. Shenematitim l'cha, as the pasuk says, you should appoint for yourself. So that means, in other words, so he's saying that's the job of the Sanhedrin Gdola to set this up. And he's not necessarily disagreeing with the Tanakhama. He's saying he mentioned the Tanakhama and mentioned this point that you have the many levels of Dayanim, and Rabbi Huda is saying that the Sanhedrin Gdola should be in charge of all of them. The Yad Rama explains that actually Rabbi Huda would agree that that would agree that so in other words, the Yad Rama says Rabbi Huda may hold that no, you don't need an individual beis din for each shevet. You could have just you have shoftim for each city, and then the next level above that is Sanhedrin Gdola. He says if they want to appoint a Sanhedrin for each Shevet, Gesunt Hate, but Rabbi Yehuda would hold they're not required to. Anyway, the Gemara continues. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, when the pasuk says for your Shvatim and they should judge, we learn from that mitzvah of a Shevet, Lodron as Shivtoi, we learn from that ideally a person from a Shevet should be judged by the Beis Din of his Shevet. So in other words, if you have an argument between two people within one shevet, they can't go to the beis din of another shevet to deal with it. They have to have it judged by the beis din of their shevet. And again, that was the Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out that was what Bnei Binyamin held, and therefore they held these people from Giva have to be dealt with in our beis din of our shevet, whereas the other shvatim held that since we have an argument over here between the Levi over here, who is the husband of the Pelegish who had been killed over there, then therefore it needs to go to the national Sanhedrin.